Hello. In this audio snippet, we would like to talk about several things related to recent headlines. We originally wanted to continue talking about music, and as we've called it, the day the music went nowhere. But for some reason, all the headlines that came out in the week leading up to this recording seem to indicate that we had to talk about this a certain theme or thread that was being manifested all of this week. So we're going to do that and hopefully continue with the music audio snippets in future, but for now we'll talk about these headlines. And I hope you see the relevance of what we're talking about in some way, shape, or form. But before we get to the actual headlines, we wanted to mention talk about three headlines that seem a little unrelated to the other headlines, but I think that in some way they are interconnected. I do see a sort of connection, even though they're not directly related to the other headlines we want to focus on or concentrate on in this recording. So the first of those three headlines that we want to talk about first is this one that was posted on the dailymail.com or dailymail.co.uk. And it was posted on the 15th of December, which is the day prior to this recording of 2023. And the headline says, Rudy Giuliani vows to appeal, quote, absurd, unquote, ruling ordering him to pay Georgia election workers more than $148 million. For accusing them of helping to steal the 2020 race. America's mayor says case will be overturned so quickly, quote, so quickly your head will spin, unquote. It says here, Giuliani's jury trial in Washington, D.C. was to determine damages he has to pay Georgia election workers Ruby Freeman and Wandria Shea Moss. Eight-person jury hit him with punitive damages of $75 on top of other damages, or $75. I don't know if it's $75 or $75 million. But the thing is that the judge ordered Giuliani to pay the $148 million in damages. This article was written by a worthless son of a bitch called Jeff Earl. It says here, deputy U.S. political editor for the dailymail.com. Cursed is Jeff Earl. Cursed is this worthless son of a bitch. Cursed is his family. May his death arrive very quickly. And when he dies, he will burn in hell for all of eternity. This is a worthless son of a bitch who does not deserve to live. Cursed is he. And the truth is going to catch up to him. And he will suffer. Cursed is he. Cursed is the stench of his presence. May everyone who's around him feel the stench of his presence, of his worthless presence on the face of the earth. And may spirits of despair come over him. And disaster befall his family at every turn. That's how worthless this worthless son of a bitch is. The article is written in this arrogant tone, condescending tone, constantly belittling Giuliani, and always kind of implying that Giuliani is a self-righteous liar or something to that effect, or a manipulator or something. But clearly there's a bias here, a very clear bias. Evil son of a bitch, Jeff Earl, cursed is he. Now the thing is that the article talks about, as I was trying to read through the rubbish that this worthless subhuman wrote, I was trying to get to, okay, if he's so adamant about Giuliani being wrong here, that he got what was coming to him, can you tell me why it was, why Giuliani's claims are so ludicrous? And I never, it never says that. It only, you have to read and read and read after all the smears until the very end of this very long-winded, useless article. It gets to the end. It says, Giuliani had claimed Moss and Freeman pulled suitcases full of ballots during the count at the State Farm Arena in Atlanta and claimed they inserted a USB drive into voting machines. But the Georgia secretary, that's what I wanted to get to. Okay, you worthless son of a bitch, tell me the evidence against Giuliani, proving that Giuliani was smearing the reputation of these women. And this is the last sentence of the article, and that's all the worthless son of a bitch had. He says, but the Georgia Secretary of State's investigation found the claim circulating against them online have no merit. That's it. So we all saw the video. It's not like Giuliani is claiming something off the top of his head. There are videos. We have seen the video clips of these suitcases being pulled out of, from under the desk, out of there. Why are there suitcases inside the voting room? And why were they taken out when all the supervisors were kicked out of the room? Why? And many, it's not Giuliani just saying this, it's everybody who's seen the videos. So why aren't they suing the millions of people who are saying the same thing that Giuliani is saying? So, and what is the evidence that was found? What was in the suitcase? Why were these women having suitcases inside the voting arena or place where they were... you know, where the tables were. Why were there suitcases under their desks? And why are they inserting a USB drive into the voting machines? So, and obviously, the Georgia Secretary of State is in cahoots with all these people. So they are obviously going to say nothing happened. But what is the evidence? Why were there suitcases? So that's one thing. But the reason, aside from from cursing this worthless piece of dirt that wrote this article, cursed is he, Jeff Earl, cursed, you're gonna burn in hell very soon. This, aside from that, I wanted to just emphasize the thing that we've talked about in previous snippets, about the ridiculous nature of our legal system, where we have people pulling these numbers, ludicrous numbers, out of their buttocks. And where's the, why $148 million? And we all complain about it, and people who are, like, for example, people on the right, conservatives, who are hit with these things complain about it, but no one says, okay, there's something wrong with the system, because why would the system allow this to happen? It's like, imagine that, let's say, American football, that in a, let's say you're an American football fan and you're watching a game and a referee, calls a penalty and he dislikes the players that, you know, that he's refereeing at that moment. He dislikes that team, let's say, and the players commit what he considers a penalty, and he decides, oh, I'm going to punish you with a 35-yard penalty. No, make it 50-yard penalty. And imagine that the referee had the latitude to choose how many yards he was going to penalize the team. And if he really hated that team, and he couldn't control his bias, that, you know, he would penalize them a ridiculous amount of yardage. you would look at that and go, well, what's this is crazy. And the league commission would look at that and say, my goodness, we have to kind of define the rules better, because we can't have referees just exposing their vitriol against certain players and certain teams by penalizing them with ludicrous yardage. So you would have to go, we have to clarify the system. We can't have a system like this. I mean, $148 million. It's like what happened with Alex Jones, who got hit with $1 billion. I forget how much it was, but it was around $1 billion, if not more, of penalty. And practically, you know, putting this cloud of bankruptcy over people's heads for the rest of their lives. And that is evil. So that means that you can't say anything. You can't opine. You can't say, well, I'm looking at this evidence and I believe this is what this is saying. No, you can't do that, because if you hurt someone's feelings, you can get hit with 50, 60, 100, 200, $300 million of penalty. Where do these numbers come from? And it's obviously based on the level of vitriol that, that just shows how broken the system is. It's not just the people being broken, it's the system. And Giuliani's complaining about all of this, but I don't think he's gotten to the point of saying, okay, there's something wrong with the American legal system where we allow these sort of punishments. And where now the legal, the judicial branch is being used as a weapon to end freedom of speech in the country. It's as simple as that. So I just wanted to mention the sadness of that. So that's one thing. Now, the other thing that we wanted to mention, a random story, is this story from, I believe it's the Daily Mail again. I'm going to click on it. And it was posted on the 14th of December, so 2 days before this recording, 14th of December, 2023. And the title of it, the headline says, Taylor Swift dons a $2,335 little black dress as she celebrates her 34th birthday with A-list pals in New York City. Then it says, Taylor Swift proves she never goes out of style as she celebrated her 34th birthday in a little black dress on Wednesday. So I assume that Wednesday was her birthday, or around that time. So that would make her birthday around the 13th of December. So it must have happened at some point this week, this past week. And I find it coincidental that we were able to get to the recording where we talked about Eva Cassidy being 33 when she passed away, and that Taylor Swift was 33 at this time when she became so dominant in the news. Ever since September, right around the time when America died, the calling of America died. So we were able to talk about her and kind of the irony or the contrast of her being 33 versus Eva Cassidy passing away at 33. And we got to say that, and then the very next week she turned 34. I find that interesting. We were able to say that. It's as if, and I know that's not how it literally happened, but it almost feels as if Taylor Swift was being put on hold. Okay, you're not going to turn 34 until it is exposed how you are the anti-Eva Cassidy. You're the opposite 33. And once that was established and set out in the open, then it's as if Taylor Swift was allowed then to turn 34. That's just a thought. But the reason, aside from that we wanted to mention this is, I couldn't care less how much the dress cost. I mean, she makes a whole bunch of money. So if she wants to spend $2,000 on a little black dress or $20,000. It's her business. I could not care less. It's not like I'm going, oh, you know, you could have fed 200 homeless people with, you know, 200 Big Macs or whatever. I could not care less, to be frank, because that kind of thinking is very limited in understanding. You change the system, then those problems will take care of themselves. But if you leave the system broken and you try to do band-aid operations of trying to help people, what I call band-aid help, instead of a fundamental transformation of the system, then you may feel good about yourself, but at the it's like plugging up a little hole in the wall where water is seeping in, while there's this humongous hole to the right of you where tons of water are pouring in, but you feel good about yourself because you're plugging up this tiny little hole where a little bit of water was seeping through. That's why to me it's not that important how much the dress cost. But what drew my attention is that it was black, and there are pictures of her here on the Daily Mail with her black dress, and a video of her showing up here in the New York area to celebrate her birthday with her friends Blake Lively and Gigi Hadid and Miles Teller. No idea who Miles Teller is. But the reason why that drew my attention when I saw the headline is that she's been appearing a lot in black. And as we shared in the previous recording, that I don't know, there's something like she's been drawn to wearing black a lot. And I know that she doesn't realize why, but there is a reason, underlying reason behind it. And it's because she represents or embodies what happened to America, to American music, the American culture, the American nation, as it became stuck in black. As we've talked about the stages, the white stage, the red stage, the black stage, and the green stage. And we never progressed as a nation into the green stage, which we got stuck in black. And she embodies that. And that's why she's feeling this urge to wear black all the time. And I know it's not a coincidence. So we wanted to mention that. And then another almost unrelated headline, which is partially related to the one we just mentioned. Again, on the dailymail.com or dailymail.co.uk. And it was posted on the 10th of December, 2023. And it says, do you know something we don't, Tony? Star NFL analyst Romo calls Taylor Swift, quote, Travis Kelce's wife, unquote, live on CBS broadcast after pop superstar was shown in crowd at Chiefs game. So apparently Tony Romo, who was a former football player for quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys, he's now an analyst on television, and he was there at the game with the Kansas City Chiefs, where that's where the team that Travis Kelce plays in, the boyfriend of Taylor Swift. And so apparently the camera showed Taylor Swift in the crowd, and Tony Romo said Travis Kelce's wife. And then somebody asked, and then the question became, do you know something we don't know? And the only reason why we want to mention this is that I know Tony Romo might have, at least from his perspective, just said it by mistake, quote unquote. But I know that Tony Romo, without realizing, was saying a reality about this. And we've said this before, so I know it's not a coincidence that he felt the need to say it, because we've said it. I don't know what recording it was in, but we did at some point say, for all intents and purposes, Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift are husband and wife. And I don't know if you've been listening to these recordings, that you may remember us saying that, and I do believe that, and I wouldn't be surprised if they end up, you know, getting literally married. But for all intents and purposes, even if they're not married officially, quote unquote, they are husband and wife. I don't know how to explain. I just know it. They're husband and wife. And it is what it is. So, and then Tony Romo just said that reflexively, without realizing that he was speaking a truth that's not visible, at least, you know, literally, but it is the reality. They are husband and wife. sorry. And so, and I'm seeing here a picture of Taylor Swift at the stadium. And again, she's wearing a black coat and with red, a little bit of red underneath, which makes sense. You know, America was went into red, then into black, and got stuck in black. So, and by the way, you know, they keep saying that the colors of the Kansas City Chiefs are red and black, and they may be, but I do remember in the past, I always thought of them as being a red team with white. So it was always red and white. But in recent years, for some reason, the color black has become attached to them. I don't remember in years past having them wearing a black or considering black as one of their two main colors. But and I know that's not a coincidence. It's all this connection to the blackness of America, being stuck in the black stage. And I'm seeing another picture of Taylor Swift cheering on her husband at the stadium. And she's wearing almost all black with some red kind of stripes. So it's, again, that blackness with a little bit of red. And she embodies that stagnation in the black horse station. That's the black in the black stage. And that's why she is constantly drawn to wear the color black. That's why the Kansas City Chiefs, for some reason, have decided that their colors are red and black, even though they've always been red and white for all these years. So, and I'm seeing another picture of Taylor Swift with her husband walking somewhere, who knows where, and she's wearing black with a gray kind of coat. But she's wearing a black top, black, I don't know what they're called, but trousers, or I don't know. I don't know the names of things like that, but apparel. But the thing is, she is wearing a lot of black, and it's not a coincidence. She's being drawn to it, and she doesn't know why, but that's why she's being drawn to wear black so much. So now that we've mentioned these three miscellaneous headlines, we would like to talk about the actual core subject that we wanted to talk about. The first one, and by the way, we wanted to get to these two headlines that we're going to share on in the previous recording from last week. But I remember as I was looking at that, and they were next in the list of things that are written down that I'm looking at, and as I'm sharing, and I felt this voice inside of me saying, "No, skip it." And I don't know if you may have noticed that in the previous recording, there was a moment where towards the latter part of the recording where I'm about to say something and I go into like a silence for a second or two, because it's like I'm hearing on the inside, "No, skip it. And I'm debating, am I hearing right? So I eventually skipped it, and it was a good thing because the recording ran very long, but we were able to get to what we needed to get to at the very end with Eva Cassidy and so forth. So there was a reason for that, but I felt like, oh, I wish I could have said that, because and as the headlines came out this past week, it was like a confirmation that thing that we skipped, which was it was very relevant, and we skipped it because it was not directly related to everything we were talking about last time, but it was going to be very relevant very soon afterwards, like the very like a few hours after the recording. I began to see all these headlines related to these things. So the first headline that we skipped, the first of the two headlines we skipped last time, is this one, and I'll have to hold my nose as I go to this website. It's a story posted on the on Mediaite.com. It's media, the word media, and then ite.com. It's a left-wing nut job website, so that's why I have to hold my nose as I read this, but I have no choice. So this was posted on the 6th of December. That was more than a week ago. 2023, and the headline says "Hell no," in quotes, and an exclamation mark. "Hell no." Marjorie Taylor Greene explodes at Speaker Mike Johnson for a cutting deal to fund quote abortion vacations, and so I'm just going to read very quickly parts of this. It says Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene, Republican from Georgia, railed against Speaker Mike Johnson, Republican from Louisiana, for allegedly cutting a deal with Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, Democrat of New York, to fund, quote, abortion vacations, unquote, also, quote, trans surgeries, unquote, and a, quote, proxy war in Ukraine via the proposed National Defense Authorization Act on Wednesday. So it says here, the whole NDAA deal was made between Speaker Johnson, Chuck Schumer, and the HAS, the House Armed Services Committee, and people like me, we didn't get to participate, unquote, complained Green in a video shared on X, previously known as Twitter. We were appointed to participate to make sure no money for abortion, no money for trans, for members like me, standing up for Americans who are sick and tired of funding the Ukraine war. We had taken the $300 million out of the defense bill. Well, let me tell you what the final product is in the deal that was made. That funding is there for abortion travel. The policy is still in place for trans and the military and everything that goes with it. Democrat trans policy, Democrat abortion policy, $300 million for Ukraine is back in the NDAA, unquote, she added. In a written statement on X, the right-wing firebrand was even more scathing. Quote, leadership is asking members of the NDAA conference to sign the 3,000-plus page conference report, which is being released behind closed doors without even getting time to read it, unquote, declared Green. She continued, she continues talking about the deal and everything. Now, there are many things to say here. First of all, I'm not a fan of Marjorie Taylor Greene. She was the one who was trying to to get Kevin McCarthy elected as speaker at the start of this year, 2023, the year of this recording, and she has that kind of like traitor quality to her. She sounds very like she's on the right path and she's saying the right things and showing that, but. And then suddenly she turns around and does like a backstabbing. There's something about her that's not right. But having said that, there is a part of her that is in certain alignment with the truth, shall we say. And I know it's not a coincidence that her surname is Green. So we've been talking about red, black, and green and all this. Well, and we were saying last time that green people, and I mean people who are in the green stage, are uncompromising. That when they are forced to kind of like do the dealings and the bargainings just to get things done, they get to the point where we go, okay, we've done that for far too long. It's time to stop. And I even said, hell no. That's I don't know if I said it, but I was saying it in my head. But that's their attitude. Green people go, hell no, we're not going to compromise anymore. We can't have this. It's do or die, and that's how they act. And they're willing to die if that's what it takes. And that's precisely the attitude she's portraying here. And she's angry and about Mike Johnson being an art of it, of the deal kind of guy doing a deal with Chuck Schumer, who I think is the one, the leader, the Senate Majority Leader. And so we have the Speaker of the House and the Senate Majority Leader cutting a deal. So this all goes, so again, we go to the thing. We all complain when these bad things happen. And she said, we got shut out of the whole process, and the bill was put together, and all these things we didn't like were added back, and we had no say in it. And see, we all complain, but no one goes, okay, there's something wrong with the system. Why do these two people have the authority to do all this stuff? And everybody else has to just accept it. Well, because we should not have these power clots. We've said it a million times. There should be no Speaker of the House, not in the way that the Founding Fathers stupidly put it into the Constitution. There should be no Senate Majority Leader. I don't think that's in the Constitution, but it is implicitly, because the Founding Fathers said that each house could, each chamber of the legislative branch could decide their own rules. So, as they pleased. So it's like carte blanche, do whatever the hell you want. And then the Senate eventually decided we need a majority leader. Just that's like as the House has a speaker, we need to have our equivalent of a speaker, of our majority leader. That's what the Speaker of the House is. It's the majority leader for all intents and purposes. And we're going to give special superpowers to this person. So this person, who is just one of many elected officials, is given a disproportionate amount of power. And then this person becomes the instrument, the puppet, through which the party people behind the scenes control things. And then everybody who wants anything done has to go kiss these people buttocks. And that's not the way it should be. But everybody complains about the consequences. No one says what's the root issue. Again, when you're stuck in black, you never deal with the root. You always deal with the harvest, but you never deal with the root. You don't deal with the harvest. You kind of complain about the harvest, but you don't go to the roots and dig them out and root them out of the ground. That's what grain people do. The other thing is, she complained about the 3,000 page thing. We've said this a million times in the Constitution, the New American Constitution. If we had survived and not died and gone on to what was coming, the greatness that was coming for America, we would have had a Constitution where it would have been against the Constitution to write a bill more than, let's say, 20 or 30 pages. In size, and that the bill had to be focused on a single topic. It could not be a hodgepodge of several things, because that's what leads to the art of the deal. Okay, I'm going to vote for your bill, but you have to add a little bit of pork to help me out, and so forth. So you start adding this hodgepodge of unrelated things that are put together just because there's a political wheeling and dealing behind the scenes. So if we had a constitution where that would be not allowed, there'd be a house referee that would be monitoring these bills and saying, okay, from an objective standpoint, these two things are not related. So you have to break them up into two separate bills. If there are five different topic things in the bill that are completely unrelated, like Ukraine, the funding for Ukraine, funding for abortion, funding for trans, whatever, all these are all different topics. They should be in different bills. So that you can vote on each issue separately, there should be no 3,000 page bill that no one can read and has to vote on, and be pressured by the party, because that's what she was saying, that she was talking about. Let me find it here. It says leadership. See leadership. What is that? Leadership is asking members of the NDAA conference to sign the 3,000 plus page conference report, which is being released behind closed doors without even getting time to read it, declared Green. So leadership, the party leaders, the speaker and the party leaders behind the scenes, that's what she's saying when she says leadership. There should be no, quote, leadership pressuring people. It should be every individual having the power to vote and decide on their own, and having the freedom to read what the hell they're voting on. 3,000 pages. That is ridiculous. No one reads 3,000 pages. No one. No one reads 3,000 pages. And it should be against the Constitution. But see, these things that would deal with the root problems, that's how those things that are never dealt with. So we all complain about the consequences, but we never deal with the roots. Because when you start worrying about the roots, you start going into green territory. The green territory is uncomfortable. Because in green territory, you know you're going to have to be uncompromising, and you have to be willing to die if that's what it takes. And these people just don't have that. Okay, so so we wanted to mention that. That's the first thing that we wanted to talk about. And we wanted to emphasize not only Marjorie Taylor Greene's greenness in this context, but also the traitor nature of Mike Johnson, because Mike Johnson seemed like the least evil. I mean, he was definitely better than Kevin McCarthy. Kevin McCarthy is an outright traitor. This guy came out looking more like a conservative who is going to stand up for American values and blah, blah, blah. But look at him. He's at the end of the day doing wheeling and dealing behind the scenes. So it's it evidences the treachery. There's a kind of a spirit or a mindset of treachery that predominates. And that's what we wanted to focus on, the treachery of Mike Johnson. And he claims to be a devout Christian. We read a headline from him talking about our faith and Psalm 34, I think it was, I forget which one, that was one of his favorite passages in the Bible, and he had the Bible open to that Psalm in one of the Bibles they have over there in Congress somewhere. And this guy was for the Bible and all this stuff, and turns around and does deals to fund abortion, to fund transsexual stuff, and so forth. And so are you for or against? You know, decide which side of the line you're on. But no, it's politics. You have to compromise. It's give and take and so forth. Yeah, you're constantly doing give and take, constantly selling out, constantly compromising yourself. Because you never want to go green. And as we said before, and we said this, maybe it sounds like a silly thing to say, but if you tell me, I'll be very frank, if you come and tell me, hey, have you met Mike Johnson? Let's say let's say I had never heard the name before, and somebody comes and says to me, have you met Mike Johnson? I'll say, no, I haven't. And the thing that I would think of in my head, the way I visualize the person, is a black person, because it's a black name, like Magic Johnson, or, you know, I think his name was Irvin Johnson or something like that. A lot of Johnsons are black, and that's what I think of when I hear the name Johnson. It's the surname of a black person. I know there are a lot of white people named Johnson, but what I'm trying to say is that he has a black surname, a surname that feels black. And in a figurative sense, he is black, but not black in terms of being of the black race. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about being a person in the black stage. There's a blackness about him. And because you're black, then you're going to compromise. And because, see, if you're stuck in black, it's because you don't want to go green. You don't want to be in the territory of being uncompromising. So you become a traitor. And when you become a compromiser, you become a traitor. You betray yourself and you betray the people who put a trust in you because you claim to believe something. But you don't believe it enough to stand up for it. You don't believe it enough to die for it. You don't believe it enough to be uncompromising about it. So then you end up being a traitor. That's what happens when you're stuck in black. Traitors come out of the woodwork because you're in an environment where people are not willing to die figuratively or sometimes literally for their principles. So the other headline that we skipped last time that we wanted to talk about is this one, posted on the gatewaypundit.com, posted on the 5th of December, 2023. And the headline says, Dublin City Council votes to fly Palestinian flag for 7 days over City Hall. So it says here, Dublin, Ireland City Council, in a unanimous vote, agreed to fly the Palestinian flag over Dublin's City Hall as a display of support to the people of Gaza. The motion to fly the Palestinian flag was first brought to a vote on November 6th, but the move failed to receive enough votes. However, on Monday, Dublin City Council changed course and reversed its prior decision. It says that later on, many Dubliners are furious with the decision and are calling out their politicians for flying a flag of another country on their city hall. In the last decade, Ireland's politicians have placed more priority and funding for immigrants entering the country than the Irish natives themselves. UFC star Conor McGregor has hinted he will run for president to fix this broken trend. Now, the reason why the headline drew my attention is that it just emphasized a thing that I've always said, and maybe we've said it in previous audio recordings, that there's something very treacherous about Ireland and about the Celtic people. It's like there's something very special about the Celtic people, but there's something inside, within the Celtic race, that is kind of like, that's the wrong way to say it, but for lack of a better way, it's almost like predestined. It's like there's a predestination towards treachery, towards being a traitor, towards betray. It's like someone who pretends to be on the doing the right thing and then turns around and does the complete opposite. And we've talked about this in passing in many of the posting for these recordings are posted in the articles that we share on that website. It's like there's a connection there, and I became aware of that when I was studying something else. It's a little bit outside the scope of this recording, but it was probably 2015, sometime during that period, that I became very aware of something wrong with people from the Celtic race. There was almost like a genetical predisposition towards being a traitor. And that's what I, when I saw this headline, I felt okay. And that's why I hope I don't offend anyone by saying this, but I despise Ireland. I have a hatred towards Ireland. I used to love Ireland as a nation, but there's something wrong there. There's something not right. I don't know how to explain it. There's something very wrong with Ireland. There's a treachery, a mindset, a spirit of treachery in that place. The Celtic spirit of treachery or mindset of treachery, whatever, however you want to call it. So it's not a coincidence that they were doing this stupidity about the flying of the flag and all that. I don't know if Ireland will ever get its act together and be fixed. Oh, and another example of treachery, of Irish treachery that I always think of is U2, the Irish musical group U2. They started this like, if you read their story, it's very, they were more or less of a Christian singing group at the beginning. And a lot of their songs had like Christian themes, especially at the very beginning when they started. There's even a song, I think we mentioned it in passing, we may have. I don't remember, but there's a song called Psalm 40, or 40, but it's based on Psalm 40. And they have, their biggest hit, the number one song, at least from them in my list, is I still haven't found what I'm looking for, which was the number one hit in 1987, if I remember correctly. And you read that song, and it talks about Jesus Christ. You read it, talking about the singer kind of at, saying, "I believe in you, that you bore the your sins on the cross for me," and then and he says, "I believe in kingdom come, where all the colors will bleed into one." And then he says, "But I still haven't found what I'm looking for." It's like an existential crisis that he's talking about. But so the thing is that they had all these Christian themes, and then suddenly something happened, and they became popular, and they began to want the love of others. They needed that emotional love and popularity of people being liked and being loved, and that's when they started selling out and the treachery. I can't say what I saw, but there was one time I saw a quick clip of Bono, the lead singer of U2, in a concert, and he did something that I can't describe because it's too disgusting. But he did something that I said, "Oh my goodness." And they call themselves a Christian, or they used to call themselves, you know, Christians, or kind of a quasi-Christian group. And I've seen Bono just degrading into this naive stupidity when he says some political statements, like he thinks he's fighting for a cause. He thinks he's being green, like Irish green, fighting for these causes in a compromising way. He doesn't understand. He's a moron. He's saying stupid things without realizing it. And even though he sounds uncompromising, he sounds Irish green, he really is not green. He has sold out. He doesn't understand. He was not willing to die for what he needed to die. So now he's saying to himself that he's dying or sacrificing his life for causes that have no reason for being sacrificed for. So there's something about Ireland. When I think of Ireland, I always think traitors, treachery. That's why Kevin McCarthy, Irish, all these people that Trump hired around him, a lot of them were Irish. And we talked about that in the tweets back in 2015 when we would post things on Twitter. If some of you may have followed those from years ago, you may recall we kept talking about the treachery of the Celtic race. There's something about them that has to do with treachery. And Trump, and we kept talking about the people, the Celtic people that Trump kept putting around him. And all of them were just brought treachery into his inner sanctum. So those were the two headlines we wanted to talk about, the Marjorie Taylor Greene headline and the Dublin City flag thing. Those were the two headlines from last week that we skipped, but it was the theme of treachery. So now immediately, like a few hours after the recording was done, I watched the news and I said, "Oh my goodness," because as I was going to say these things last time, I was going to mention or reemphasize Tennessee and Ohio. Tennessee and Ohio, and we've said this before. When I think, if you ask me, okay, if you ask me like something like, give me the name of two states that come, the first two states that come to your mind when you hear the word treachery or traitor, I would, without thinking twice, I would say Tennessee and Ohio. And I think we've said this before in previous recordings. I don't know exactly why, where that came from, but it was one day years ago. I just saw Tennessee. It's like almost like a vision. I saw Tennessee coming up in front of me, the shape of it, you know, as it looks on the map. And I saw, it's like traitor. it just jumped out. The word traitor jumped at me. It's almost like I had this, almost like a vision that I saw the state of Tennessee and I saw the word traitor come up, leap up at me. And I've always believed that. And interestingly, Andrew Johnson, the worst president in American history. To be frank, just as a side note, that's something to congratulate him for, because we've had so many lousy presidents that to be the worst of the bunch takes a lot of lousiness. It really does take a lot of dedication to being lousy and wrong and evil to make it to the lousiest president in American history. But Andrew Johnson was from Tennessee. I think he was born in North Carolina, but his family moved to Tennessee. So he became a Tennessean, and he was the governor of Tennessee and so forth. And when he left the White House, he went to die in Tennessee. And the worthless son of a bitch, I believe, is burning in hell as we speak. But and his name was Johnson, just like this Mike Johnson. And Andrew Johnson, a traitor. Lincoln brought him in. Idiot Lincoln brought him in as vice president. Why? Because he wanted to show the South the spirit of compromise. He wanted to reconcile with the South. So he took the Southern Democrat and put him as his vice president. And then Lincoln, you know, got shot in the head, and deservedly so. And then because he had Andrew Johnson as his vice president, then Andrew Johnson took over. And then he hindered and blockaded everything that had to do with Reconstruction. And that's why Black people did not get the chance to live out the freedom and reap the harvest of the 600,000 lives that were sacrificed so that they could finally have the freedom that they were supposed to have had so many years before, almost 100 years before that. So Andrew Johnson, traitor. He kind of made himself look to Lincoln like he was a good, decent human being, and it was a lie. It was treachery. And he was from Tennessee, and that's not a coincidence. So as I was thinking about traitors, because of these other two stories about Taylor Greene and Mike Johnson in Dublin, I was thinking in my head, I'm going to mention Tennessee and Ohio again. So because we didn't get to these links, we didn't talk about that. But then a few hours afterwards, I saw this headline, and I'm going to read it very quickly here. Again, on the dailymail.com or dailymail.co.uk. This was posted on the 9th of December. So it was of 2023. So it was last, exactly 1 week ago, the very day of the previous recording, shortly after the recording had been done. And it says here, at least six people are dead, including a child, and dozens more injured after monster tornado ripped across Tennessee, destroying homes, tossing trucks, downing power lines, and causing a huge explosion. Multiple municipalities have reported deaths, injuries, damaged homes and buildings, and downed power lines. Several people posted videos of the tornadoes across the South on social media, including one poster on X who saw a twister from a wrestling school. Apparently the tornado, there were twisters in Kentucky, Mississippi, and Tennessee. And it says here, those states in Alabama are under a tornado watch that is expected to last until the end of the day. But the main target of these tornadoes was Tennessee. And at least six people dead was like a big story that day. It says a monster tornado ripped across Tennessee. And I know this is the judgment released, as even though we didn't say it out loud last time, I was thinking about the traitors, and then this was released on Tennessee, deservedly so. I'm still not quite sure how the traitor thing is related to the things we talked about last time. But I think there's something there. So if we talked about Well, and we did mention Tennessee, now that I recall last time when we talked about the how Bite Me's Department of Injustice fined a trucking company, a Christian trucking company in Tennessee, and that's when we started talking about all these fines and where do these amounts come from and so forth. So there's some connection to what we were saying last time, but the thing is that even though we didn't say it out loud, there was already like a pending judgment that was going to be issued out towards traders because that was going to be the theme of the week, dealing with traders. And then let me read this other headline. This was posted on December 10th, the day after the story of the Tennessee tornado, monster tornado. It says here on the dailymail.co.uk, it says YouTube aviation star Janie Blaylock and her father are killed in horror plane crash in Tennessee, just days after she posted final haunting video of pair flying together in the same tiny aircraft. So apparently from, I could be wrong, but from what I can quickly see in this story, this crash has not is unrelated to the tornadoes, to the monster tornado that ripped through Tennessee. But I said to myself, what a strange coincidence. Another story about a tragedy in Tennessee. And it's that judgment being issued against the mindset or the attitude of treachery in Tennessee, that Tennessee represents. So this lady, Jenny Blaylock, and her father, killed. And I know it's not a coincidence. I know it's not. Why Tennessee? And the headline mentions Tennessee explicitly. And there's some pictures of her, and I feel bad for her and her father for having died, but I know it's not a coincidence. These things always happen for a reason. Interestingly, someone wrote here, our family is taking great comfort in knowing that they were together when they met our Lord and Savior. At this point, we're still trying to process this tremendous loss. We ask that you pray for our family in the days and months ahead. So apparently they were from a Christian family, and so forth. It says a fire consumed the plane in the surrounding area, but was quickly extinguished by emergency responders. Jenny, a business owner, described herself as a quote private pilot flying for fun in Beechcraft Debonair unquote and on her YouTube account. Quote, private pilots have a unique perspective on aviation that can be informative and entertaining, unquote. She wrote on the channel, which has more than 15,000 followers. On her site, she describes her father as having, quote, years of flying experience. But apparently, the experience that her father had and all that just was not enough. I don't understand the full scope of this and why they died, but I know the headline itself does represent this judgment against the treachery. People who are half-heartedly believing in something and who on the surface seem to be standing up for the truth, but who behind the scenes are willing to stab people in the back if that's what it takes to achieve something practical. So that's what they represent. And I don't know, and she tried to take off the ground and fly. And I think that's flying in a sense is kind of more of a green thing because you start detaching yourself from the natural realms of this world. But if you're trying to go green, but your heart is still black, you are going to crash and die. It's like what happened to the little girl crossing the street that we talked about in a previous recording. Or Napoleon. Napoleon was stuck in black, and we talk about this in one of the writings that we have, that we share on the website where these recordings are posted. We talk about how Napoleon was stuck in black, but he wanted to do a green thing, and he boldly went and attacked Russia, and that was his undoing. Because if you're black and you say, I'm going to do what green people can do and conquer the way green people can conquer, when you do that, you're just setting yourself up for a big, big disaster, a big failure. If you're going to go green, you better make your heart green, and then you can go green. But don't pretend that you can achieve the fruits of greenness without being green. If you catch what I'm saying. And that's the problem, is that arrogance of saying, no, I can achieve all the results of greenness without having to sacrifice myself the way green people do. I can stay black and do and achieve green results, and that's never going to happen. That's when you're going to crash and die. So another story that we wanted to share here is from the dailymail.co.uk, once again, posted on the 10th of December, that same day of the story of the plane crash in Tennessee. It says, former House Speaker Kevin McCarthy formally endorses Trump for the 2024 race and says he's open to serving in his cabinet. And I find this laughable, so laughable. Again, McCarthy, you know, an Irish surname. And for some reason, as I've said before, I keep wanting to call him Mike McCarthy. And I think that's in part because there used to be a famous head coach for the Green Bay Packers in American football who was called, if I remember correctly, Mike McCarthy. But I think that the reason why I feel the need to call him Mike is because he's like Mike Pence, the traitor Mike Pence, who betrayed Trump and everybody and all his supporters, all the people who voted for him and Trump. He betrayed all of them because he wanted to compromise and be loved and be liked. And that's what leads to a lot of treachery. You know, people who claim to believe in something and maybe to a certain extent believe in something, but are so concerned about being loved and being accepted that they end up betraying the people who stand up with them because they claim to support something. So every time I see Kevin McCarthy's face, I see Mike Pence. I don't know, like the same look, same. I don't know if someone would technically say that they're physically similar in their faces. But for some reason, I see them very, like, when I see Mike Pence, I see Kevin McCarthy. When I see Kevin McCarthy, I see Mike Pence. They have that same look. The only thing, Mike Pence looks more sold out. Kevin McCarthy looks more manipulative. He has something, he has this glint in his eyes, but it's more like a clever con artist who's waiting to pounce on you the moment you turn around and are not looking. Mike Pence is this more like he's high on something and he's aloof and he thinks that he knows better than you and he's going to get around your stubbornness he's going to do something behind your back to get around your stubbornness because you don't know what's good for you. And he does. That's the sort of aloof, arrogant attitude in Mike Pence. Kevin McCarthy is like this weasel, just waiting to see when you will not be looking to take advantage of you. And so I find it hypocritical that this man who, was useless as speaker is now saying I'm endorsing Trump because he's seeing the poll numbers and he wants to jump on the Trump bandwagon. But if Trump ever gave him a cabinet position, which he would, because that's how stupid Trump is, then Kevin McCarthy turned around and stabbed him in the back, just like all the others that he put in positions of importance. when he was in the White House. So another traitor. So that's that. And Kevin McCarthy had the chance to make the videos public for the January 6th thing, and he did and he didn't. He pretended to give them to Tucker Carlson or someone like that, and then he took them back. And if he really was in favor of supporting Trump, he would have exposed all the stuff that went on. He had access to all of it. He could have exposed it, but he didn't, because he doesn't want to die. He doesn't want to sacrifice his political career. So he pretends to support Trump now openly, but behind the scenes, when he had the chance to do something, he didn't, because he only pretends to support what he pretends to support. But behind the scenes, he's ready to betray those principles at the first opportunity. An Irish traitor. So another story that came up. This was from on December 7th, 2023, and it says, and I didn't run into this story, I think, until later, until this last week. And it says, it's on the posted on the dailysignal.com, posted by Mary Margaret O'Lohan. Not sure if that's an Irish name or if I'm pronouncing it correctly. O'Lohan or O'Lohan. So it says, exclusive, parents outraged after trans-identifying boy wins girls' Irish dancing competition, heads to Worlds. So it says here, a teenage boy who identifies as a girl is heading to the Irish Dancing World Championships after placing first in the U14 2023 Southern Region Oireachtas competitions. Sorry if I'm mispronouncing that. Parents of girls competing in the Irish dance are frustrated and outraged, saying that they cannot understand why a boy with physical advantages is allowed to dance against their daughters. So the thing is that, again, Irish dancing. The betrayal. See, the Irish people claim to be devout Catholics, people who follow traditions and blah blah blah, and look at what they're doing. And again, the Irish thing, the Irish theme, the traitor theme. So people who claim to do one thing, but they do the opposite. At the end of the day, because they want to be loved by the world, by everybody else. They're willing to betray their own traditions and the things they claim to stand up for, just to be liked. So another story that we wanted to share on, and this one has several dimensions to it. It was posted on the 10th of December, so it was the day after the tornado that hit Tennessee, and also the same day that the story of the Tennessee plane crash appeared, and posted on the dailymail.co.uk, and it reads, Patrick Mahomes screams at referee, slams his helmet to the ground, and has to be held back by teammates after last-gap offensive offside call sees Chiefs lose huge game to the Bills. The Chiefs saw a late touchdown negated due to an uncommon penalty, and Patrick Mahomes was absolutely livid with the decision. Now, I remember this was a Sunday game, and I remember I went out for a walk on Sunday, and as I was coming back, I live near bars, so there's a bar in the corner, and it's a quasi-sports bar, or, you know, a bar that has a TV screen, and they are always showing games, and as I was crossing the street, I looked in, and I saw that, I saw into the bar, and there was the TV screen, and they were showing... The the game of the Bills against the Chiefs, the Buffalo Bills against the Kansas City Chiefs, you know, the team where Taylor Swift's husband plays. And I saw it and I said, oh, I hope the Bills win. And I interceded very quickly. I hope the Bills win and beat the Chiefs. I am beginning to despise Patrick Mahomes and what the Kansas City Chiefs stand for. So I sent that out. That intercession just kept going. And I, you know, since I don't follow these sports anymore, I didn't, you know, make sure what the score was at the end. But then I found out that thankfully the Bills beat the Chiefs. And apparently the Chiefs supposedly scored a touchdown on this very fancy play that they made. But one of their wide receivers lined up offsides. So he lined up a little bit ahead of where he was supposed to line up. And that's a clear, you know, penalty. The thing is Mahomes was complaining. Patrick Mahomes, the quarterback, who, by the way, Patrick Mahomes, he's supposedly a Christian. You see pictures of him, you know, kneeling down and pointing to the sky, thanking God. And I've seen him in post-game interviews saying, I thank the Lord Jesus Christ for this and that and the other, for the victory and all that. So he sounds very, you know, very Christian, very devout and all that. But then as we've began to share in previous recordings, you see him suddenly on a talk show with people like these late night talk show hosts here in America who are vitriolic left wing liberals, Stephen Colbert and the other moron, I forget his name, these evil people, sarcastic and evil people, and you go, well, if you're a Christian, what the hell are you doing talking to this guy who is the very opposite of everything you supposedly stand for? And but see, he wants to be popular. He knows that's where the hip crowd likes to go. Those are the shows that the quote hip leftists watch. So he wants to be loved. So I began to see he's a traitor, and I began to see the contamination on him. I don't know how to explain it. Like this yucky thing on him, that is this unclean yuckiness on him. The same thing that I saw when I saw Damar Hamlin. If you remember that, he coincidentally is a Buffalo Bills football player. He was the player who had this heart attack in the middle of a game, of a nationally televised American football game on a Sunday night, I think it was. It was like because there are certain games that are, most of the games here in America, they are viewed locally. You know, the local team, the local city watches their local team on television. But there are certain games that are watched by the entire country. Sunday night football. I think they still have Monday night football. I'm not sure. And then they came up with Thursday night football. So those are nationally televised games. And I think this game with the Bills, where Damar Hamlin had his heart attack incident, was a nationally televised game. And that's why it drew so much attention. And he was supposedly a Christian and all this and all that. But we kept talking about all that was wrong with him. And too long, so we've already said that before, so we're not going to repeat it. But the thing is, I remember when I saw him for the first time, when I saw Damar Hamlin for the first time, I saw this yuckiness on him. Like, I don't know how to explain it, even though he claimed to be a, quote, like, nice Christian kid who does a lot of good charitable things. I saw yuckiness in him, and I began to see the same yuckiness in Patrick Mahomes. Again, people who claim to stand up for something and then turn around and do the opposite, and deliberately so, like with no regret about it, and stabbing people in the back. It was interesting when I saw this. I said, my goodness, this does not look like what a Christian would do. You know, I understand being outraged over something that was wrong, but if you read here, it says, he said, the Christian Patrick Mahomes said, that is, I can't say the word, starts the letter with the sixth letter of the English alphabet, So I'm sure you know what letter that is, and that is bleep, terrible, he also said. He had to be held back by his teammates during the tense moment. The quarterback continued to complain about the call when he greeted the Bills' Josh Allen after the game. Quote, "Wildest bleep game call I've ever seen. Bleep, terrible," he said. You know, and all the bleeps are from that word that starts with the sixth letter of the alphabet, of the English alphabet. So it says here, Mahomes said after the game, quote, "It's tough to swallow, not only for me and football in general, to take away greatness like that. To take away greatness." That's what he said. "To take away greatness like that. For a guy like Travis to make a play like that, you want to see the guys on the field decide the game." Now, the thing is, the play was very interesting. From what I could hear or read and see, he passed the ball to Travis, you know, Taylor's husband, or wife. Sorry. I'm sorry, Taylor's husband. Yeah, sorry. With the gender confusion, I'm getting confused myself. So the thing is that, so Taylor's husband received the pass, and then he did a lateral pass to someone else. And that's very uncommon in American football. That, you know, that's what you see in rugby, but not in American football. So this trick play, and then this other guy who received the ball then ran in for the touchdown, and they took the lead, and it looked like a great play. But it all started with, I don't know if it was the same guy who received the pass from Travis and scored, but one of them lined up offside, and you're not supposed to do that. And it's just lack of discipline, just complete lack of discipline. It's like in football, in the real football, if you score a wonderful goal, but you're offside, goal doesn't count. Doesn't matter how much how beautiful it was a scissor kick, and you did a backflip and the scissor kick, and then did three somersaults. It doesn't matter how beautiful it looked. If you were offsides, you were offsides, and the goal doesn't count. And it's kind of the same thing here. It says here, he said, quote, "They're human. They make mistakes, but every week we're talking about something. It's the call, just in that moment, not for myself, to have a flag change the outcome of the game. I've never had offensive offsides called. If it does, they warn you. There wasn't a warning the entire game, and then you make a call like that in the final minute? Another game we're talking about the refs. It's not what we want for the NFL. It's not what we want for football." So he's saying that in other games, the referees would go, hey, Patrick, by the way, your wide receivers are lining up offside, so please be aware of that, because we don't want to call you on that, because you're very popular right now in the league. You have lots of fans, and we don't want to make you look bad. So can you please tell your receivers to line up?" Can you imagine? So he says that he gets preferential treatment, that the referees warn him. So they let them line up offsides the first time, the second time, the third time, and if they keep seeing it, then they go and tell him, "Please don't do that, because we really don't want to call you out on that." So he complained that he didn't get the warning. What? See the arrogance of this. Does this sound like a quote Christian, a person who is, you know, a person of principle and character? This is a spoiled little boy. It says here, fans thought that Mahomes' scorn should have been directed at Tony rather than the referees, who correctly determined that the receiver was offsides. Tony apparently was the guy who was offsides. Someone says, someone wrote, "Mahomes bitching out a referee for an obvious offensive offsides lost a ton of respect for Patrick there." So, see, these people who loved him and supported him feel betrayed because he's really not the person he claimed to be, or he's acting the opposite, and he doesn't care. See, you see, the thing is that sometimes you make mistakes, and that's a different story, or you're not clear on things. But in this case, it's just him having sold himself and being just blatant about it. Then it says here, he's so openly angry, and then it says, with the loss, the Chiefs have now lost four of their last six games and fell to 8-5. The Bills improved to 7-6 and kept their playoff hopes alive. And I found this interesting for many reasons. One thing, it's that thing, that spirit, that attitude of betrayal. People who stand up for something and then do the complete opposite. Because they've been compromising. They've been selling out to be loved and liked. They want the love. They want the soulish communion, that emotional attachment. They feel the need to be with someone, with the people who are popular. They don't want to be ostracized. They don't want to be alone. They don't want to die alone. So they start compromising. But the other thing that drew my attention is, okay, this is where the Bills, they played against the Bills. That's where Damar Hamlin played. And by the way, Damar Hamlin, I remember he came back this season. I remember he played in one game, and when he went into the game, the crowd stood up, and it was this big news story about him coming back and wonderful. And then the conservatives saying, oh, the power of prayer, because, you know, people were praying for him. All the Christian idiots were praying for him. And then he was all arrogant, that you could see the uncleanness in him, the cockiness, unclean cockiness. There was no humility. There was no thankfulness. It wasn't a man who had been to hell and back and was thankful that he was back. There was nothing of that. It was just this arrogance. Like, I made it, man. I made it. I made it back. And look at how great I am because I came back. When I said that, I just felt like he was saying, in your face, man, in your face. And I felt it as an affront. And I said, oh, okay, whatever. But you're still cursed. You're still cursed. And I stopped, I didn't follow up on him, like trying to find out how he's doing and all that. But then I found out when I went to see his stats the other day, this past week, I went on to Wikipedia or whatever, wherever I went, and I saw that he's only played in one game this whole season, one game, and it must have been for a few minutes, and he's been sitting on the bench ever since, and I'm pretty sure he didn't even play for one down in this game against the Chiefs. So he's still on the sidelines. So the impact of what happened to him is so great that he can't even play now. And he went into the game just for one symbolic play or two, I guess, just to make it look like he really is on the comeback trail. But he isn't, and he's cursed. And instead of looking at his situation and saying, "Oh well, you know, I was so critically injured by the injections that I really have to speak out," he still can't, because I know he knows deep inside the injections have something to do with his heart attack. But he knows that if he says anything like that, he's going to be disliked, and he's going to create controversy, and he's going to be ostracized by the cool crowd. So he's not going to do that. So he's sold out, and that's why he's been benched and sidelined. But because he was sidelined, that allowed the Bills to then overcome Mahomes and his treachery. And I was thinking about these things before this recording. I felt the need to ask myself, well, by the way, Mahomes is black. He's half black. He's black, but he's kind of he's very pale black, so he's almost white. Clearly he is a mixed race person. And I went online to look up information on him, and his father was black. I had never seen him until a few hours ago, and his father's name is Pat Mahomes, so he's Pat Jr., you could say, but he goes by the full name Patrick Mahomes. His father goes by the name Pat, you know, just a short abbreviation of his name, just to avoid confusing the two. That's how they have named each other, shall we say. So his father, Pat Mahomes, was actually a Major League Baseball pitcher. Wasn't that great, but he had a winning record overall. He played for the Twins and some other team. I didn't know any of this. Wasn't aware that his father was a baseball player. He played in the major leagues and he had a 5-point-something ERA, so it wasn't that good, but he won more games than he lost. So, I try to find a picture of his wife, or Patrick Mahomes' mother, and I couldn't find, because there was no reference to her anywhere, but I kept seeing this picture of the father with a Minnesota Twins uniform holding up this little kid, which looked like Patrick Mahomes as a baby, and then next to him, a woman. So clearly it looks like a husband and wife with their kid. And the wife is this very pretty white lady, and I say pretty because there was something about her face, like a kindness. I don't know how to explain it. There was a kindness in her face. So I'm pretty sure she had a very strong influence in Patrick Mahomes' life, and maybe the good things in him come a lot of it comes from the mother, and the father looked like a decent person too. Like a nice, kind person. So, but the kindness kind of showed even more powerfully in the mother. And the thing is that, so he's a mixed race. So when I would think of him, I would think of a black person or a black / white person. But I said to myself, Mahomes, what is that? That sounds Irish. And then I went to, I did a search to see the origins of the surname. And the first result that I found is in houseofnames.com. And it says, Mahomes history, family crest and coat of arms, origins available, Ireland. And it says, in its ancient Gaelic form, the Irish name Mahomes was written Mac. I don't speak Gaelic, so it's Mac Matga. Mac Matgamna, which later became Mac Matuna. Both names are derived from the word Matgaman, which means bear. So the name comes from a word meaning bear. So Mac, yeah, it's like son of bear or bear. So they mentioned more information about it, that it was first found in County Clare, located on the west coast of Ireland, the province of Munster, where the McMahons were lords of Cork, Bayskin, and possessed the greater part of the baronies of Moyarta and Clonderlaw. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing this right. So apparently McMahon and Mahomes are related surnames. The thing is that he has an Irish surname. And I said, oh my goodness, the theme, the Irish traitor, even though he's black. But, you know, I hope you see what I'm saying. It's not a coincidence that he has an Irish surname. And when I went to look at his Wikipedia page, Patrick Mahomes' Wikipedia page, I found this section called Philanthropy and Activism. In April 2019, Mahomes announced the establishment of a nonprofit organization called the 15 and the Mahomes Foundation. The nonprofit's website states that it's dedicated to improving the lives of children. Okay, that sounds nice. To me, as I've said, yeah, it's so nice that people do this, but if they focus on that alone, it's like trying to plug up this little hole on the wall while all this, there's a big hole right next to them where all this water is just seeping, just flooding in. But okay. So it says, following the murder of George Floyd. Let's correct that. Following the death of George Floyd by police officer Derek Chauvin, Mahomes, along with teammate Tyrann Mathieu and several other NFL players, made a video encouraging the NFL to condemn police brutality and violence against black people, and to admit it was wrong to silence Colin Kaepernick and Eric Reid for the protest during the playing of the national anthem. And then it says here, Mahomes and Matthew started a voter registration project in Kansas City. The project encouraged residents to register to vote in the 2020 presidential election. He worked with the Chiefs to encourage players to vote. He joined LeBron James's Rock the Vote initiative to encourage people to register and vote. LeBron James is a worthless son of a bitch. He may be popular, he may be well known. By the way, in the NBA, he has a lot of stats and has a lot of records and stuff, but he's played in an era where basketball is no longer basketball. If you touch someone, just barely touch them, it's a foul. So that's why they have in the NBA here in America scores of 140 against to 130, scores that I would never hear in years past. In the past, it was much more physical, much more gritty, gutsy type of game where you had to have a little bit of character. Now it's just all these morons just running around and dribbling and dunking, and there's no defense anymore. And so all the records that LeBron James may have are asterisks. They all have an asterisk next to them because he's playing in an era where there's no control of anything, where the NBA no longer matters in any way, shape, or form. And he's a moron, a worthless, arrogant little moron. And Mahomes is aligned with him. Mahomes, speaking for George Floyd, a drug addict, a person who made all these decisions in his life that led to him, to his death, and instead of saying, hey, we as black people have to hold ourselves accountable, we can't pretend like we are inferior subhumans who are not as accountable as the rest of humanity for their own actions, We can't live like this anymore. We can't be the slaves of the white liberal who's telling us to keep smoking weed and just collecting government checks and complaining when things go wrong and when we don't feel responsible for our own shoplifting, for our own abortions, for all the things that we do and to destroy ourselves. We are not accountable because we're not as human as white people. White people are accountable. They're not only accountable, they're twice as accountable as regular human beings. But we are not as good as white people, so we are not as accountable. So instead of complaining about that, about trying to deal with the big hole that we were talking about right next to him, where all the flooding is coming in, he's plugging up these little holes and then doing all this social popular thing and trying to stand up with the social causes that all the morons in America, the leftists in America are supporting. So he's a traitor. That's what he is, a traitor. So that's what he represents. We're running out of time. I hope you've seen the relevance of what we're talking about. There is a purpose. Let me just read this very quickly, this other headline. Posted on December 11th, 2023. And it says, quote, on thegatewaypundit.com, by the way, thegatewaypundit.com posted this. It says, quote, I don't like the way he calls people names. I like Ron, unquote. Anti-Trump candidate Craig Riedel, I guess that's how you pronounce it, Riedel, trashes Trump in recorded phone call with donor, then flips and endorses Trump with dishonest statement after getting exposed. So again, we see a traitor, someone who behind the scenes says one thing, but in front of you says something else. That's I guess, the basic definition of a traitor. So I'm not going to... by the way, and the reason why this also drew my attention is because of what I'm about to say. Read here. GOP Ohio congressional candidate Craig Riedel was exposed last week for making anti-Trump statements to a potential donor, but later endorsed President Trump in 2024 after the phone call audio was posted online. So, see, he was talking to a potential donor. See the wheeling and dealing thing that we're talking about? See, the when you're in an environment stuck in black, that's what we're trying to point out here. When you're stuck in an environment stuck in black, you're going to have traders coming out of the woodwork. Why? Because when you don't want to go green, you are against uncompromising attitudes. That means that you are going to double down. You're going to create an environment that fosters compromising, the art of the deal, wheeling and dealing to get what you want. And so treachery begins to abound. And that's what this guy was doing. He was talking to a donor. He knows the donor didn't like Trump, so he started trashing Trump to get money from him. But then he turns around and he knows that's going to be bad for him in his poll numbers. So then he turns around and says, no, I'm for Trump. See, say whatever he needs to say to get what he wants. And he was from Ohio. See, these two states, Tennessee and Ohio. And by the way, I think the day after the last recording, I was watching television, or had the television on, wasn't really watching, and there was this show about real life crimes, and you know, narrating how the criminals were, how the crime was investigated, and the culprit was eventually caught, you know, that type of show. And I was doing something else, and then the show, that episode was about to end, and I felt the need to turn around, or it was by accident, I'm not sure, but I think there was a purpose in it. I looked, and they were reenacting, I think it was a reenactment of the guy getting arrested. They handcuffed him and put him in a police car. But as they closed the door, I don't know if this, it may have been the actual arrest, I'm not sure, but I think it was a reenactment, but regardless, they put him into the police car, they closed the car door, and then as the door was closed, I could see a sticker on the car door's window. And it was a round sticker, and it recognized it immediately. It's the logo of the Tennessee Titans, an American football team. They used to play in Houston. They used to be the Houston Oilers, and then they moved to Tennessee and became the Tennessee Titans. And the thing is, I immediately said, oh, Tennessee again. And I don't know the story because I wasn't paying attention, but I'm convinced that the crime that they were describing was some horrific crime committed by someone in Tennessee. And so I said, oh, interesting. And then that episode ended, and then they did another episode of that same show, I think, came on. And at the very beginning, they started talking about a horrible crime committed in Ohio. I said, wow, interesting. Back-to-back shows, one from a crime about a crime in Tennessee, and then immediately a show about crime in Ohio. And I said, wow, I know that's not a coincidence. Tennessee and Ohio, they are the poster children of treachery. They are the Benedict Arnold states, the states that represent the treachery of America. After reading this, I felt this need to find out who, you know, what is the origin of the surname Riedel? I had never seen it before. It's spelled R-I-E-D-E-L. And lo and behold, I found this on houseofnames.com. So I did a quick search, origin, surname, Riedel. And I was doing the search on my mobile phone. And what happened because of the screen being narrower, the result, this is from houseofnames.com. They have at the top the flags of the countries where the name comes from. But the interesting thing, when it says origins available, quote, a colon, and then underneath it, to the left, the first flag I saw was Ireland, and then next to it, Scotland. And it's like Ireland jumped at me as the first flag I could see. But it turns out that England was actually the first flag, but England appeared on the first line. You'd have to see it to see what I'm saying. I don't know if I'm describing it correctly, but England was off to the side, and Ireland, the flag of Ireland, was right below the words "Origins Available." And I could see next to Ireland the flag of Scotland. And the flag of England was above the flag of Scotland on the first line, but more to the right. So it's like England was kind of shoved to the side, as if the truth was saying to me, "This name is Irish. For the purposes of this, it's Irish." They talk about the origins in England and so forth, but then they have a section here that says migration of the Riedel family to Ireland. Some of the Riedel family moved to Ireland, but this topic is not covered in this excerpt. Another 69 words, 5 lines of text about their life in Ireland is included in all our PDF extended history products and printed products wherever possible. So they want you to pay for something here. But so that's why they don't disclose the information, and that's okay. But the thing is that they have this section on the Riedel family migrating to Ireland, and I would not be surprised if this Craig Riedel came from the Riedel family that migrated to Ireland before coming to America. So again, that connection to Ireland and treachery. Ireland, which I mean, there's no country more associated with the color green than Ireland, I would dare say. So it has a green name to it, but it's actually very black underneath. And because of that, it's a place of treachery. And so the next story that we wanted to mention is posted on the gatewaypundit.com on December 12th, 2023. And the headline reads, "Ainsley Earhart warns Nikki Haley, I'm sorry, wants Nikki Haley as Trump's running mate because Trump needs more turncoat warmongers in his inner circle." That's just something that they added there, the writer of this article. So again, turncoat. So again, the guy is recognizing Nikki Haley as a traitor. She is a traitor. And Trump had her in the administration. She was the UN ambassador to the US ambassador to the UN, I think. But she's clearly a traitor. And too long to explain, but she's definitely not, she claims to be one thing, but she really is another. And the reason why I wanted to bring that up is again the connection to the theme of treachery that was going on throughout the whole week. And let me read just small parts of this very brief article here. It says here, and these people are anti-war. You know, these are the conservatives who say we should never go to war. So there's that element, the stupid element of, you know, that warmongering term that they use to belittle anyone who believes in fighting for something outside of the U.S. They are so blind and selfish, and no, not they don't understand that if America was given the blessing of what it was, so that it would, and with that came the responsibility of doing what was right in the world. And the moment, every time America reneged on that responsibility, it had consequences here. So even if you don't go out and fight, the problem is going to come to you, and you are going to suffer. We as a nation suffered every time we refused to do what was right outside of our borders. That's a reality. These people are so stupid, they don't understand that. They would rather burn in hell than have that understanding, receive that understanding voluntarily. So they'll have that understanding shoved down their throats after they die. But the thing is that, so forgetting their stupid commentary on war mongering, whatever that the hell that means to them. Let's read what it says here. Haley wants more wars and less individual freedom. The GOP loves her. What could go wrong? Trump would be ill-advised to choose the former governor. There's nothing there that appeals to the Trump base. Trump does not need Mike Pence 2.0 anywhere close to his administration. So you read that and you go, okay, aside from the warmongering stupidity, I see what you're saying, and I agree. I would agree. But isn't there something else to say here? Because they say Trump would be ill-advised to choose the former governor. Yes, it's a VP, but by the way, when Trump was in the White House, he chose her as the U.S. ambassador to the U.N. He had her in his administration the whole time. So they keep talking about this as if Trump had never been in office and had never shown his treachery, his own treachery, his own brand of treachery. When he betrayed the base, they are saying clearly that she does not appeal to the Trump base at all. Yet Trump chose her to be part of his cabinet when he was in the White House. But this guy who wrote this doesn't even bother to put two and two together there, because that would mean saying Trump is not our hero. And if Trump is not our hero, who can save us? And they know there's no one to save them because there's no salvation available anymore. The country is dead. And it's dead because they never admitted that they needed, that their understanding of the world was not enough to save the country. They never were willing to understand that. That's why America died. But the thing is, they're never willing to go there. And then he says, Trump does not need Mike Pence 2.0 anywhere close to his administration. Oh, okay, wait a second. Mike Pence. Who was Mike Pence? The vice president. Do you think Mike Pence would have been the vice president if Trump didn't want him there? Are you too stupid to think, so stupid you think that Mike Pence was forced on Trump, and Trump had to agree with it? Well, if Trump is such a man of principle, why would he agree to that? And Mike Pence was not forced on him, that means Trump wanted Mike Pence. What does that say about Trump and his ability to judge people? But they don't go there. See what I'm saying? That's what's so frustrating about these people. These conservatives are stupid. They don't put two and two together because they don't want to admit the truth. They're stuck in black. They're stuck in black. And but again, the theme of treachery. Nikki Haley is a traitor. And I didn't realize this, but I said to myself, what is the origin of Haley, the surname? So I did a quick search. And voila. Or Wikipedia.org, there's a page for the surname Haley. And it says here, Haley is an English surname. So it says English. It's based on a place name derived from Old English heg, meaning hay, and lea, meaning clearing or meadow. But it says here, the surname Haley was found in County Sligo, Irish Sligaig, in the province of Connacht in northwestern Ireland, where they held a family seat from ancient times. The original form of Haley is O'Helechta. I'm not sure how to pronounce it, I have no clue, which is derived from the word Ealadach, Ealadcha. Sorry, I don't speak Gaelic, which means ingenious. Another Gaelic form of the surname is O'Haledy, whatever, which is derived from the word Aelide, whatever, which means claimant. So they start with the claim that Haley's an English surname, but then the whole next paragraph is talking about the original surname is from Ireland. So it's an Irish surname for all intents and purposes. And so again, an Irish traitor, that connection to treachery. We're running out of time, but we're going to mention a few more headlines very quickly. Here on the dailymail.co.uk, once again, posted on the 10th of December, 2023, it says, this is Trump speaking. Quote, Joe, be very careful what you wish for. unquote. Trump tells raucous Wall Street crowd that, quote, bite me in indictments, unquote, against him open, quote, Pandora's box. So then that's the headline. And then it says, Donald Trump told the crowd at a New York Young Republican Club event that the indictments against him have, quote, opened Pandora's box, unquote, and that the president should, quote, be very careful what you wish for, unquote. The former president currently faces 91 felony counts from four separate states and federal probes. So this angered me. And you say, well, why would you be angry at that? Well, I disagree with what, and I'm totally against what Bite Me is trying to do, using, again, they've been using the judicial branch as a weapon, as a political weapon to suppress freedom of speech and political opposition. So that's wrong, that's evil. Of course. But what bothers me is the statement, Joe, be very careful what you wish for, because you what you're doing to me is opening Pandora's box. In other words, you mess with me and try to put me in jail for because you are trying to silence me and run me out of the race. If you do that, I'm going to, when I get in office, if I get elected, I'm going to prosecute you too. And I go, what? See, if someone murders your family, or let's say someone murders a person, you know, maybe it's not your family. They murder someone that you're acquainted with, but is not a member of your family. Wouldn't you be outraged at that on principle, on general principle? Someone murdered someone else for no reason at all. Hence, that person who committed the murder should be prosecuted, no matter what. But what he's saying is, if that person then comes and tries to kill or injure a member of my family, then I will go after him and prosecute him. See what I'm saying? It's like, okay, if you do it, I'm not going to prosecute you, but I'm going to use it as a Trump card. I'm going to use it as a card if you try to do something to me, because then I'm going to threaten you with this card. Like, okay, you want to mess with me, then I'm going to pull up some of your dirty laundry and accuse you of it. Well, shouldn't you pull out the dirty laundry regardless? If these people are committing a crime, you go after them, full stop. It has nothing to do with whether or not they're coming after you, too. You see what I'm saying? That's why when he got elected, I know, and I've said this before, and I know this in my knower, he made a deal with Hillary Clinton and said to her, if you try to challenge this election, I am going to get on you and prosecute you for all the crimes you committed. You know, the famous server that she had, remember that computer, the separate server, separate email account, because she didn't want to have her dirty dealings recorded on government hard drives. And then she erased the hard drive and 20,000, 60,000 emails, and it suddenly disappeared. All of that is against the law. It was blatant law violation. It was not ignorance, not like, oh, I didn't know. She's been in Washington for a gazillion years. She knew what she was doing, yet Trump, so there was corruption, blatant corruption. And you want corruption to stop it. How do you stop corruption? You go after the people who do the corruption. You can't, if you don't want to do that, that corruption is never going to stop. But he decided not to go after Hillary because he used it as a Trump card, as a weapon. Like, this is my ace. I'm going to pull my ace. Okay, you want to challenge my election victory? Well, then I'm going to prosecute you. Okay, that's how you back off. And then Trump walks away thinking, oh, what a genius I am. I was able to do the art of the deal, and I got a deal with her. And in the meantime, there were a lot of people acting on her behalf, started trying to do the Russia scandal, you know, the scandal where they were claiming the Russians helped Trump get elected and so forth. It wasn't Hillary, but it was someone else. So Trump, thinking that he was this genius that had stopped Hillary was actually, Hillary did it anyway, and Hillary challenged him. It just didn't work because there, obviously it was all nonsense, nonsense accusations, so it never really panned out. But what I'm trying to say is Trump is like that. So he's a traitor. He is a traitor. Traitors do deals all the time because they are stuck in black and they never go green. A person of principle, of uncompromising character and principle, is not going to say, oh, I'm going to wait for you to come after me before I prosecute you. He will go, I'll prosecute you even if you don't touch me at all because you're doing something evil and you're destroying the country by doing that. On general principle, I will go after you. But that's what is so... But on the surface, it sounds so bold. Joe, be very careful what you wish for. You're opening Pandora's box. No. Pandora's box was opened a long time ago before they came after you. Pandora's box was opened when Bite Me and his son Hunter were doing all these deals with foreign entities. When Hillary was using her position of secretary of whatever the hell she was to gain political favors and contributions to the Clinton Foundation. That's when Pandora's box was opened. It wasn't open when they came after you. You stupid son of a bitch. Pardon my French. This is what a traitor sounds like. This is exactly what a traitor sounds like. And the morons who read this, the conservatives who read this, don't see it because they're stuck in black. And that is so angering. And that's why I've said before, if you go to the tweets that we posted on Twitter or X or whatever it's called now, back in 2015, 2016, we kept saying there's something Irish about Trump. Because when I would see his name, for some reason, it would turn Irish in my head. I don't know why. And I know Trump is a German surname, but it always looked Irish to me. I don't know why. And then as I saw his behavior, it became more evident. He is an Irish traitor. And that's why it's not a coincidence that the lady on Fox News, Ainsley Earhart, this analyst commentator, and I remember when I used to watch Fox years ago, Fox News, I remember her very well. So I know who she is. She's been there for years and years. She was back there back in 2004, 2005, when I was watching Fox News at that time regularly. So she's been there for, I guess, 15, 20 years. So I know who she is, Ainsley Earhart. And she was saying, oh, Nikki Haley should be the vice president candidate next in Trump's ticket. And I did a search on her surname to see if it was Irish too. It turns out she was Earhart is a German surname. And I know it's not a coincidence. It's like there's something about the German about Germany also that has an element, not a full element, but a partial element of Irish treachery. There's a connection there of treachery that goes into Germany. Not sure how or exactly why, but it's there. But it's not as full-blown as Ireland. Ireland is like full-blown treachery. In Germany, it's like there's a certain element of it inside of Germany. But I'm not sure how else to phrase that. So there's another example of treachery. So now... Now that we've said all that, now I want to go to the what I call the bye-bye section of this recording. We want to share a couple of links or stories about that first. The first link is it's a story posted on noqreport.com, which always redirects you to AmericaFirstReport.com. But I always type NOQReport.com because I don't want to type America First Report. I don't like the America First mindset. And we've explained why before. Even though I love this country, the problem is if you put America first, then truth comes in second. You have to put truth first, then America is second. But you put truth first, and then America is going to be blessed by you putting truth ahead of America. But see, it's a paradox, you know, just to use a fancy term, it's a paradox of when you want something so bad, you end up losing it. But when you decide to let something that you love go, you gain it back. You know, the story of you love something, let it go, and all that stuff. But it's, yeah, it's that paradox that sometimes if you try too hard to hold on to something, you lose it. That's what why conservatives lost the freedom in America. They tried to hold on so hard to their freedom in a way that was not right that they lost it completely. So it says here, but I digress for a second. So here on NOQReport.com, on December 9th, 2023, they posted a story that said, Canadian journalist who advocated draconian vax passport mandates dies mysteriously at 33. I said, interesting, 33, because we've been talking about that age. We talked about in the last, very last recording about Eva Cassidy passing away at 33 and Taylor Swift being 33, and she just turned 34 this week. So he died at 33, Canadian journalist. And I see his face. He has this stupid wide-eyed face, and there's a certain smugness in the picture that's there, like naive and smug. That's the worst combination you can have. A person who is naive and who is self-righteous about it. It can't get any worse, it feels like. So here it says, and I'm sorry, I feel a bubbling of chuckling and laughter as I read this. The list of outspoken COVID-19, quote, vaccine advocates dying continues to grow, most including Canadian business journalist Ian Vandale. I'm not sure if that's how you pronounce it. V-A-N-D-A-E-L-L-E. I think it's a Dutch surname. Vandale were otherwise young and healthy before their demise. Vandale was 33 when he died earlier this week. As usual, nothing connecting his untimely death to COVID-19 or the spike protein-inducing, quote, vaccines are openly mentioned by medical professionals or media covering the story. It doesn't matter how many people die mysteriously. The jabs are not allowed to be considered as the root cause, even though the scientific evidence makes it pretty obvious. It says here, Vandale had taken to social media multiple times advocating for incentives to encourage COVID-19 vaccination, the implementation of vaccine passports, and the termination of those who refused the jab. In one social media post, Vandale stated, quote, I, for one, advocate we bring the carrot and the stick. Incentivize getting the vaccine however we like, ice cream, lotteries, literally whatever, I don't care, and require vaccination to do non-essential things. Want to go to a bar to watch the game? Passport. In another post, he urged the Toronto police to terminate members who declined the jab, saying, quote, take the jab or resign. Anything else is moral, unethical cowardice. You take an oath to protect citizens? You get vaxxed. Shameful that we have to say this, unquote. Vandale seemed in good health and actively engaged in work, as indicated by various social media posts before his hospitalization. So, when I read this, he died, and all I feel like is waving, and I'm waving my right hand right now, and I'm saying, bye-bye, bye-bye. Now he's burning in hell, as we speak. He's burning in hell, and I feel bubbly on the inside. Son of a bitch is burning in hell. He sent lots of other people to hell before he died, so there's no like, oh, how dare you say that. He sent a lot of people to hell himself before he was sent, so bye-bye. You know, and some would say, well, that's not the right thing to do. And some conservative Christians say, we Christians don't talk like that because that's not proper proper conduct of a Christian person. And then I'd say, you stupid son of a bitch Christian, conservative Christian, go read your Bible. Go read Revelation 19. Just go look it up. I know that you don't read your Bible a lot, or at least you just read Psalm 23, Psalm 91, and I'm pretty sure you read maybe the first few chapters of Matthew and Luke during Xmas. In other words, during your celebration of Saturnalia, you stupid, ignorant, so-called Christian. So you don't read much. maybe you read the Ten Commandments just before watching Ben-Hur, or I don't know. But you don't read your Bible, so I know it's a challenge to you to go to make you go read your own stupid. How can I say this? See, you make your Bible look stupid because you treat it like trash. You don't read the thing you claim to believe in. So go read it. Go read Revelation 19, and I'll leave it as homework for you. And you tell me if your God is wrong in saying what he supposedly said according to your own beliefs in Revelation 19. Go read it. And I guess you'll probably be too stupid to even understand why you're reading that and how that has to do with what I'm saying here, because that's how blinded you are. But in short, that talks about the righteous people of God, according to that passage, celebrating and rejoicing and dancing at the destruction of Babylon. So if God was against that sort of attitude, why would he say that and show it as a good thing? Why doesn't he admonish those people? See, I agree that you're not supposed to just enjoy the pain of others for the sake of it. But there is a righteous indignation that rises up, and you have to have a conquering attitude. That's the conquering personality. And when you conquer and defeat someone who has been just staunchly determined to destroy you, destroy truth, then you rejoice, not because of what was done to you, but because of what was done to the truth. You see what I'm saying? It's not personal. It is personal in a certain way that you became aware of it through your personal experience. But at the end of the day, you're outraged at the evil done against the truth. And if you love truth more than yourself, then you will be outraged. You will rejoice when those who are against the truth perish. And when they perish because of their stubbornness. See, it's different from a person who is wrong but doesn't understand it. That's different. That's when you have more compassion, more empathy. But when a person is convinced, see, this guy was not like confused. He was determined. You don't want to get the injection, you lose your job. You don't want to get the injection, you can't go to a bar. You can't enjoy life. You can't have freedom. We're going to constrain you and make your life miserable if you don't abide by what I say. Does that sound like a person who is confused? Well, confused in a deeper sense, yeah. But I mean confused in terms of, I'm sorry I didn't realize what I was saying. No, this guy was determined. And so I go, bye-bye. And he deserves to go to hell. He is burning in hell with me. I'm giddy. I'm giddy all over reading this story. Cursed is his family. Cursed is anyone who supports him. And I feel sorry for him. Cursed is anyone listening to this who is outraged and me being rejoicing over this. Because it's not that you're attacking me. You're attacking the truth. Because that guy was against the truth and did everything in his power to destroy the truth and those who spoke for the truth. He was a hindrance to humanity, and he was leading other people to hell. And you are upset that he's gone, and that there should be no joy over that? That someone who was doing evil to others is gone? Okay. Another story that we wanted to share along the same lines is on thedailymail.com. It was posted on December 14th. It says, Turkish lawmaker dies 2 days after collapsing while giving a speech saying Israel would suffer the wrath of Allah for invading Gaza. Sorry, I'm sorry. I'm having trouble containing my joy. A Turkish lawmaker has died 2 days after collapsing while giving a speech in parliament saying Israel would suffer the wrath of Allah for invading Gaza. Hasan Bitmus. When I read that name, it sounds like bite me. You know, the real name of Joe Bite Me, the senile bastard. So Hasan Bitmus, 54, a member of parliament from the opposition Felicity Saadet Party died in Ankara City Hotel. Health Minister Fahrettin Koca told reporters in televised remarks. Video has shown Bitmus falling to the floor after giving a speech in the General Assembly Hall, and I'm seeing the video, so I'm sorry for laughing, hall in Ankara, prompting other politicians to run over to his aid. Rounding off a strongly worded speech, Bitmus had concluded, "We can perhaps hide from our conscience, but not from history," stating that Israel will suffer the wrath of Allah. At that moment, he stumbled and dropped to his knees before lying flat on his back. The Saadet Party Kokaeli deputy had to be stretchered out of the hall after receiving chest compressions for a long time, Turkish media reports. So, yeah, the son of a bitch died. So he collapsed. He was taken to hospital, and he died 2 days later and is now burning in hell officially as we speak. So how did Allah work out for you? All right, so I feel like, you know, bye-bye. And you might say, well, how is this related? Treachery has broken out. And these traitors have to be terminated. Doesn't mean that you have to go and take a gun and do some mass shooting. That's not what I'm talking about. And if you hear that, then you're really not paying attention. But the thing is, when you go green, you become a death sentence to these people. See, you don't have to go and kill someone literally, but by you acting, when you enter into the green stage, you become self-sacrificial. You're willing to die yourself, and you become death to anyone who opposes the truth dramatically. So anyone who becomes staunchly anti-truth will face the greenness in you, and you will become a death sentence to them. And this is what's happening. This is an example of that. And I've said many times, if you've seen on the website where we record these, where we post these recordings, we've talked about Turkey and the evil in Turkey. And for years, I've had this thing about Turkey. This place, that's why I despise the little bastard boy, Erdogan, who was in power there. So the thing is that there's something very evil in Turkey. And it has to be terminated. And this guy was an example of that. He got terminated. He got all self-righteous, and then, boom, immediately after that, he faced the very wrath that he claimed to be imposing on Israel. And the other thing that comes to my head when I see these stories and I start, you know, bubbling with giddiness, as I start thinking, a certain song sometimes starts playing in my head, and I'm going to play like maybe 30 seconds of it. I hope you'll be able to hear it, and let me see if I can find it. Let me see if I can position. I'm on a video on YouTube that is from their the official video for this song, and in the video right now I can see on screen there's this woman who like a giant woman, you could say, who has these puppet thingies and with puppet strings that reach down to five singers on stage. They are small compared to her. She's like the puppet master. And she's moving, you know, the puppet thingies and, you know, moving the strings so that the five persons are on stage, you know, start moving. So they're her puppets, you could say. So in that context, this is what they start singing. So I hope you can hear this. This video has run very long, so we're running out of time. So here we go. Bye, 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 bye. I'm sure you know, a lot of you may know what that song is. It's called Bye 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 by NSYNC. And interestingly, that song was written by the people at Chyron. It was a company that was based in Sweden that wrote a lot of hits for the Backstreet Boys and NSYNC, which are kind of like a very similar to NSYNC are very similar to the Backstreet Boys. So I don't know if you were able to hear. I'll just read some lyrics very quickly from the song. It says, "I'm doing this tonight. You're probably going to start a fight. I know this can't be right. Hey, baby, come on. I loved you endlessly, and you weren't there for me. So now it's time to leave and make it alone." So they're trying to break out of the puppet master, and the puppet master is a woman. It represents a pastoral environment that promotes this matriarchy of the female personalities, this of this organizer and the server, and it's the willingness to break out of the system. Because see, that's the allure of the system. That's why these people are the traitors betray, because they want the popularity. That's by the Patrick Mahomes, and all these people are constantly trying to be liked and betraying their own principles, because they want to be part of the system. And that's why the song says, "And you weren't there for me, so now it's time to leave and make it alone." Like, okay, I'm willing to be by myself and break off from the system, because I can't be with the system and be and live within principles. And the song, the lyrics may look a little simplistic, and they're very long, so we're not going to read them. But when I hear the song, if you ever want to hear the full song, at least I feel this presence. I don't know how to explain it, and it's like the song just flows within me, and I feel something like there's a substance in the music, even though the lyrics don't sound that deep and philosophical, like a Police or a Sting song or a Coldplay song or whatever. But still, there's this depth to it. There's a substance. You feel the substance flowing through you. And that's why these songs, became so popular and so forth, because people could perceive there's substance there. And this song is a liberating song. It's a song that says people come out of the oppression and be willing to be by yourself, and don't just play within the system just to be loved and be accepted. You have to be willing to have the courage to be on your own. And recognize when there's falsehood, and break away from falsehood, because you say, you've been lying, you've been lying. There's falsehood in you, and I am not going to let you manipulate me with that falsehood anymore. And I'm willing to be by myself. There's something empowering in that. There's something flowing through you as you're hearing. There's a substance to it, and that's the sort of thing that we won't have in American music anymore, because America is dead. And it's dead because of all the traitors. It's dead because of so many factors. But in essence, we got stuck in black, and they just opened the path for all this treachery. And when people are not willing to go green and make the sacrifice, to make uncompromising decisions to transform the system, and are always willing to play within the system and never question the system from the roots, then you're eventually going to have death. And then we're going to end up going nowhere, which is what's happened to American music and what's happened to America now that America is dead. So thank you very much for listening.